From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. And on this day, Mainers legalized marijuana last November. We'll check in on what's happening with that in Augusta. And why Southwest Harbor is saying no to cruise ships. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The commercial licensing and sale of recreational marijuana in Maine is not likely to begin until next summer, as a special committee hammers out the regulatory framework for it. Steve Missler reports on some of the changes the panel has made to the law that voters approved last fall.
The Marijuana Implementation Committee agreed to a variety of changes, among them a moratorium on social clubs, where recreational marijuana can be legally consumed in a lounge-like setting. It's also proposing a change to how the drug is taxed, adding a 10% excise tax based on the weight sold from commercial growers to retailers. The excise tax would be separate from the 10% sales tax approved by voters. That applies only to retail sales. And as an incentive for towns to opt into the legal market, committee co-chair Roger Cates says there's a kind of revenue-sharing mechanism.
We do think it's important that there be not be wide areas of the state where there isn't any opportunity to buy legally. So we have put in our proposal something where a percentage of the taxes that get raised are going to go back to the municipalities that do allow for retail and other activities in their towns to provide some incentive for folks to participate here in the legal market.
Kate, a Republican state senator from Augusta, says the provision tries to strike a careful balance, allowing towns opposed to legal marijuana to ban commercial sales, distribution, and cultivation, while also encouraging towns ambivalent about the new industry to give it a try. The revenue-sharing proposal is one of many included in a wide-ranging bill that the committee has been working on since earlier this year. The bill attempts to wrestle issues touching on a number of policy areas: public safety, public health, labor relations, even whether landlords can rent to someone who consumes marijuana. Tackling those issues has taken time, but Cates and co-chair Teresa Peirce say it's time to kick their legal marijuana machine into high gear.
I think it's important that once we do our work and pass the bill and it goes into effect, that we encourage and work closely with the executive branch to work at all haste to get it up and going. Because the longer we go along without it being a market and ready to roll, the more the illicit market still plays in the state. And we really want to get away from that.
Lawmakers on both sides of the legal marijuana issue seem to agree that replacing the illicit market and replacing it with one in which pot is tested and taxed is the main objective.
The sooner we get this up and running, the better. As we've said, there's only two groups of people who should really want to see this legal market up and running quickly, and that's people who like marijuana and people who don't like marijuana, because either it's going to be done legally or it's going to continue in the black market.
But getting the regulatory framework up and running may continue to be a slog rather than a sprint. Peirce and Cates are hopeful that the legislature will pass its proposed bill as an emergency during a special session in late October, but there are doubts that that session will even take place. And even if it does, state agencies will have to draft rules, and Governor LePage has been a vocal opponent of recreational marijuana.
I think the administration has largely been disengaged in this process. I think that's disappointing. It's unlike the experience that Colorado and Washington State had in particular.
Peirce hopes the LePage administration will participate rather than gum up the process. She noted that Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper originally opposed the referendum to legalize marijuana in that state,
but realized that once it passed, he needed to embrace it. And you do that for public safety and public health. And I really hope that when our work is done, and I think we've done good work, that the executive will engage and have that goal in mind.
The proposal will now be drafted by committee analysts before it becomes a public bill. Once that happens, the committee will hold a public hearing and work sessions in September. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The western side of Mount Desert Island is closer to becoming a cruise ship-free zone. That's after more than 100 Southwest Harbor residents unanimously voted last night to impose a 180-day moratorium against the use of any town facilities by cruise ships. A.J. Higgins has more.
Last year, when the 310-foot-long Pearl Mist arrived in Northeast Harbor, she sparked a local controversy that ended when the Mount Desert Board of Selectmen voted to bar future cruise ship visits. When American Cruise Lines sent out feelers this year about the possibility of anchoring off nearby Southwest Harbor and shuttling passengers back and forth from a private dock, the location was different, but the reception was the same.
And for good reason. The amount of damage that this kind of activity does to our local fishing gear, and they're the people in town, they're the people that are here year-round, buying things from the shops, going out to supper. Those are the people, our townspeople, that we need to maintain.
Harbor Master Adam Thurston says pleasure boat operators and working fishermen who share the harbor have been able to achieve a balance that would be upended if cruise ships were allowed to anchor off the community and launch their 36-foot-long tourist-filled tenders. Thurston says the cruise ship traffic creates congestion on the water and on the streets when the ship's passengers come ashore to explore the area or board buses for other parts of Mount Desert Island. Andy Mays, a lobster fisherman and chair of the Harbor Committee in Southwest Harbor, says it's difficult to estimate the extent of gear damage caused by cruise ship visits to the region. But he says a recent call for help from one yacht owner gives him some idea.
A big motor yacht that was in here a few weeks ago that was 200 feet, I took 27 lobster traps out of. They were really good about it, but they got hung up with them, and then that's how many they made it in with that had to be removed. So there would have been at least that amount that got torn off and not returned.
Mays said all of the 119 Southwest Harbor residents attending the special town meeting supported the temporary ban after expressing concerns over town infrastructure limits and the potential for the cruise ship industry to change the character of the community. Residents of the neighboring town of Tremont may also take action to ban cruise ships from docking there. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
A few times a year, people from all over the U.S. and well beyond come to Maine to learn the science of all things rotten. The Maine Compost School has been teaching people how to turn organic trash into treasure and glop into gold for 20 years, making it the longest-running program of its kind in the U.S. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
Making a good compost is not for the faint of heart. It involves lots of things that stink, several things that crawl, and trillions of things you can't even see.
Careful where you step, because there is some active chicken manure in some of these piles.
On this hot summer day at Highmore Farm in Monmouth, flies are zinging about several shaggy piles of wood chips, eggshells, peeling scraps, and grass clippings, and chicken manure, each pile a curated blend teeming with hungry bacteria. Mark King, a compost team member from the Department of Environmental Protection, points to a pile that has a problem.
Like this one right here is the wet pile. And the way you can tell is because of all the leachate around the base of it. Leachate is liquid loss of nutrients.
It's also incredibly smelly. And if you have too much of it oozing from the bottom of your compost pile, then your mixture is wrong.
And we do this test called the squeeze test, where you grab a handful of the material and you squeeze real hard. If water shoots out between your fingers, then it's too wet. If you open your hand and it crumbles out, it's too dry. If you open your hand and it makes a wet little ball, then it's perfect.
Van King points to the Goldilocks pile. Not too wet, not too dry, it's just right. A perfect mix of nitrogen, carbon, oxygen, and water with an earthy smell that's well on its way to becoming a rich, fertile material that will help plants grow. Troubleshooting compost is just one of many lessons offered at the Maine Compost School, which has been teaching the finer points of decomposition to students from all 50 states and dozens of different countries since 1997.
Is this a carbon source or a nitrogen source?
Carbon. It's the best in the world from what I hear.
That's Jake Smith, who's made the trip from Nashville, Tennessee, where he works for a company that designs a type of barrel composter.
We manufacture it and then sell it to the local poultry farmers there in Tennessee and Carolinas. A lot of growers down there composting with their litter, and then also their mortality.
mortality as in farm animals that have died. It's become a major focus for both farmers and the Maine Compost School in recent years. Instructor Bill Seekins, who's retired from the Maine Department of Agriculture, says mortality is an unavoidable part of farming, and some of the old ways of disposing of those large carcasses are no longer acceptable.
You know, the practice of just dragging the cow out and dump it over the stone wall and hoping that something will carry it off is being frowned on.
At one time, another option would have been to send the animal to a rendering facility to be converted into other products such as tallow and bone meal. But there are fewer of those facilities now and none nearer than Massachusetts. Enter composting. Composting can be used to safely break down pretty much any organic matter, even with risky conditions present. In 2015, when the avian influenza outbreak hit the poultry industry, experts from the Maine Compost School were flown out to Iowa to teach farmers there how to safely dispose of diseased carcasses. Mark King with DEP was part of that group.
We had one farm that had over 6 million birds on it, and we basically created the best recipe, and we ended up with about 16 miles of windrows.
That's a 16-mile-long mound of compost, and that was at just one farm. King says in years past, all those birds would have been incinerated or buried. But incineration is not environmentally friendly, he says, and recent research indicates that diseases like avian and swine flu can survive in buried carcasses and infect groundwater systems. With composting, the biological processes neutralize pathogens, leaving nothing behind but the basic building blocks of organic matter. Composting is also gaining popularity as a gentler, greener way to handle the remains of beloved pets, spawning at least one business in Lewiston, which specializes in composting horses. In fact, the next compost school this month will focus on how to compost large animals, but that class is already filled up.
So, is grass a carbon source or a nitrogen source? And the answer is yes.
The classes, held 2 to 3 times per year, have always filled up. George McDonald, a team member from DEP, says students have come from 42 different countries, some with significant development challenges.
A number of our students from other countries are interested in trying to better manage their solid waste stream so that the organics, which have value to soils, don't end up in the landfill. One of our students came from the Galapagos Islands. And any organic that they can recover and use to improve the soils on their islands is critical.
The team itself was first formed in Maine back in 1990 to help address a growing concern over how to handle organic wastes, especially from the seafood industry, where piles of reeking fish guts and lobster shells were fouling the air of seaside communities. The team has since composted everything from simple grass clippings to entire whales. The DEP's Mark King says the team recently got a call from the FBI, which studies human remains at a test location popularly known as the body farm.
And what they wanted to do was they wanted to compost a body, and then they wanted to have a dog go and a cadaver dog and see if they could tell that there had been a body in the compost.
King says when the FBI is ready to move on that project, the team will be there to help. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, August 16, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.